And today we're talking about jobs in the economy with Dr. James B. Huntington. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Doug. Good afternoon, listeners.
And we would be remiss if we didn't mention something about this, since I don't know that it has to do with that many jobs except his own and what it's going to do for the economy, because he's tying it up in one website. But it does look like Elon Musk is getting his wish and getting Twitter for only $44 billion. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, they agreed. They agreed to sell itself to him for $54.20 a share, which is a 38% premium over what it was a month ago. So you've made a few bucks if you have a decent amount of Twitter.
Now, here's the thing. To my understanding, and maybe you have a better grasp on this than I do, Twitter has not exactly been making a lot of money over the years, right?
Right. It's one of these things that's heaviest on market cap, things where the stock goes up, things where prospects for the future seem to overwhelm an investor's eyes, what it's really doing now. There are a lot of companies like that have been amazingly unprofitable. Even Amazon was not making money for a long time, but everyone thought it would, so that's where the stock went up to. So you're right. It's not going to have a lot of employees. There might be 500 in the entire company. Something like that.
Well, here's the thing.
Past decade.
But even if you buy something, now maybe I'm dumb like this, and you can explain how this actually works. But say you buy something for an overinflated price, even if you want it badly, even if you're willing to pay that price just to get it and do what you want with it, that doesn't guarantee it's going to stay at that value. I mean, and by the way, he could take the whole dang thing private if he wanted to, right?
Absolutely. Yes, he could. He could buy back all the stock and have it be his. Now, when they often refer to the owner as somebody who owns a lot less than the entire amount, so it's not any guarantee that he's going to have every scrap of it. And you're right. I mean, he may take it public. I don't know what plans he has. I think he'd just sort of like to have it.
See, But, I mean, here's the thing. Now, if I'm a guy that's got all the money in the world and I don't care that I just spent $44 billion on something and I don't care what the value of it is because I wanted it, what I'm thinking is I'm going to do everything I can to tank the stock price on it, and then I'm going to buy the shares at the lower price, and then I've got the whole ball of wax, and I don't care that I lost the money because my ego wanted me to buy the website. So, fine, I get Twitter, and then I get the whole thing, and it either sinks or swims. It doesn't matter. It's his. He can do what he wants, right?
Right. That's taking it private, as you said. Yes, it's always possible. There are private companies out there that used to be public.
By the way, on Twitter today at about 12:15, Elon Musk tweeted, "I hope that even my worst critics remain on Twitter because that is what free speech means." Think he'll live to regret that little statement?
Yeah, probably. But, hey, I mean, he has three times $44 billion still in his pocket. So, like you said, he can do whatever he wants.
Originally, I didn't think we were going to get to this, but since I brought it up anyway, Dr. Huntington has written extensively on electric vehicles and self-driving vehicles and all the technology that are involved in that. I sent him two stories. One was a Tesla that was self-driving, and the cops pulled over, and there's nobody inside, and then the thing takes off, not on a high-speed chase, but to find a more safe place to pull over than the cops had pulled it over. And they're like, there's nobody in here. Now, I'm sitting here thinking, I know that what some of the critics are going to say. Well, if it had been a human being that did that, they'd be pulled out of the car, beaten, arrested, everything else, everything the people that hate all cops would say. And not that there aren't situations that go south like that, but it's like I'm trying to figure it. Would it go through a stop sign or something, or it didn't signal, or what?
Or maybe they were just concerned about the way it was driving. That's often the case. Maybe sometimes they can be very, very cautious, and it could be he was wondering if there was some problem with the driver or something.
Well, here's one and I didn't send you this link. There was a guy, and I don't know where this was. I'm thinking California, because the other stories are California. he was in the back seat of one of these self-driving Teslas, and he's just grinning to beat the band. And several people, of course, take video of this guy, and you see him in the back seat of this car, just smiling like the Cheshire Cat. And of course, they call the police, and he's in a world of hurt now, because you're not supposed to let it drive by itself that way. You're supposed to be behind the wheel in case something goes wrong, which he didn't do. So he's in a world of hurt.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, what they do with that depends somewhat on the local regulations. I was in Chandler, Arizona, 2.5 years ago, and watched the driverless cars go around. They had people in them, but they were testing. They were obviously running the same course over and over again. And one of them, for example, went into a convenience store parking lot and parked in sort of a handicapped space. It went into a handicapped space, I should say, and then slowly backed out. And it was obviously testing, you know, that what it could do. That's what the rule was set in Chandler. They were allowing them to go around, and it was a great test area for them. It was quite interesting to see. I mean, they were at best, or they're just the sort of normal, rather conservative drivers, the way they go.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to be.
And one other story I did send you to get your thoughts on, and this reminds me of a joke I had made, only semi-seriously was it a joke, some years ago. I said, can you imagine if Microsoft, if Word, or if Windows were a car, and your car sometimes didn't work, or sometimes you had to reboot your car when you're going at highway speeds, or any of the number of problems that we have with computers. And admittedly, the problems are less, but they're still there. And there's this guy in, where was this? I think Riverside County, California. He was the owner of a Tesla Model 3, and he's on the highway, and the thing speeds up to over 80 miles an hour and won't stop. And eventually, a police officer helped him get the car slowed down and off the road. And Tesla said, oh, we have to reboot your car. Here, it's rebooted. It won't do it again. And the guy's like, you think I'm just going to believe you because you tell me it won't do it again? Well, there was something with the software. We rebooted it. We rebooted your car, and now it's fine. Trust us.
That's not very confidence-inducing. No, I had not heard of that. But, and yes, well, there are some bugs out there, but it just really does not seem to me like we're going to have the will collectively to put up with them and get people to understand that funny things will happen and there will be even more fatalities. But of course, we're looking at 30,000 a year fatalities from non-driverless cars, of which 93% or some such are because of driver error.
Yeah. And according to the story, they diagnosed and found a poor communication from the charge port door causing power conversion system to shut off in order to protect aboard components during the drive. This is what Tesla told the owner. He says, I need more explanation. I'm on the freeway. It happens at 83 miles an hour. Everybody is going to say, well, we fixed it, but I need more of an explanation. And apparently this isn't the only one that's happened. They had to do a recall on 500,000 of the vehicles of the Model 3s last December, and supposedly they got everything taken care of.
Yes, that's one possibility. A bit more disturbing than them just stopping, but that can cause accidents too.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, now a friend of mine has a Tesla 3. He loves it. He's had no problems with it whatsoever, except for the occasional person who doesn't like Tesla owners and will shout something obscene in his direction. But there's enough Teslas where his doesn't stand out that much on Long Island. Around here, I've seen a couple of these, and they do stand out simply because they're kind of unique. Are we too worried about the glitches and it's all going to work itself out? What do you think?
Yes, I think so. I mean, that's sort of a blithe choice you put together there, but in general, we have to realize that in order to make an omelet, you have to break eggs, and things will go wrong. But I think we've already shown when everything seemed to fizzle out almost when that pedestrian was hit and killed, that I don't think we have the tolerance to to put up with those. Of course, it's obvious. We're going for a nice, really quite a fat target. If you're talking about 80 people a day being killed by cars, that's a lot of deaths that can be made up with one here, one there, one injury there. And you mentioned this 83-mile-per-hour thing as if nobody even got hurt, let alone anything else. So it scared some people, but otherwise didn't hurt anything.
I suppose the guy will be looked at the same way we look at Edison or a bunch of other people, you know, years from now. Oh, yeah, Musk was this guy that did all. And, you know, I mean, some of the movers and shakers of the day probably were not universally loved for whatever reason, whether it was Henry Ford being a vicious anti-Semite or, quite frankly, paying people more but expecting them to be almost slaves to whatever they wish you to be if you're an employee. But years later, it's like they're just accepted part of the folklore of the United States, I guess.
Right, right, exactly. Time goes on and some of the edges and nuances sort of go away and people don't remember them. I mean, it is also true that his assembly line, for whatever his faults otherwise, was a huge industrial event. And the idea of paying workers more and going somewhere anyway toward paying people enough that they could afford your product. There were big differences in cars between, say, 1915 and 1925, where in 1925, all kinds of people were buying them and driving them. It may have been a tenfold increase. And one reason was he sort of brought that down to the people and made more of them, brought the prices down, had a whole set of workers, a large number of people who probably would buy the cars for themselves, and so on. And we went from there to cars being commonplace.
Be interesting to, if we could look back on it now from a future perspective and see how this date is going to be seen when we've got electric cars. Although, I'll tell you, Selena Zito, who is a commentator and a reporter, and she's based out of Pittsburgh, did a piece where she was talking about, you know, it's amazing how cars became ubiquitous. However, you didn't have the government saying, here, you really need to replace your horses with these cars. Here's some money to help you do it, and here's some money for, Henry Ford to help build these things. It was something that the marketplace decided it wanted. The marketplace hasn't necessarily decided they want electric vehicles or self-driving cars.
Oh, not. Well, you're sort of going back and forth between electric cars and driverless cars.
Well, either of them, I mean. I don't know that either of those things are something that everybody wants.
Well, driverless cars are obviously happening much sooner. Electric cars, I'm much less happy with. I'm not really happy at all with electric cars the way they've gone. I first learned about them in the 1960s, and many of the problems they have then, they still have now, despite all this massive effort to get people to buy them and drive them, and people forgetting that more than one-third of our electricity in this country comes from fossil fuels. And the last I heard, only 2% of car sales were electric, and that included hybrids. Now, I've driven hybrids, and it seems to me that's really the way to go. You can get about 60 miles an hour because it goes to electric at low speeds, but they will talk as if they're about to solve the problem of range, which is really the killer for pure electric cars. But they can do a lot better, I think, by settling for hybrids and realizing that as it now stands and as it will stand until developments are actually put into service and work, that pure electric cars just are not going to work for very many people.
Yet it seems like we're being told by certain people in the government and certain scientists, like, oh, you'll have nothing but these and like it in a very few years. We'll make sure of that.
Well, I don't like that attitude, of course.
Yeah. But if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. We'd never do anything to prevent that, right? We're with Dr. James B. Huntington. We like him. We'll keep him, too. And you can join us at 814-946-0435. We'll talk about the AJSN. What's that? It's how we're doing in the jobs. That's just ahead on WRTA 3.
Let's hear your opinion after the break.
I'm going to take a strong stand against it.
It makes my blood boil. Absolutely makes my blood boil. I'm disgusted.
Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA.
The WRTA sportsmen bring you local and regional sports action on WRTA and across the Leitner Communications stations. Please help us thank these outstanding community supporters. Culligan Water Systems of Altoona, Best Way Pizza of Greenwood, Altoona, and Hollidaysburg, ARC Federal Credit Union, and Pacifico Bakery, Altoona. If your business would like to join this group supporting local and regional sports broadcasts, call us at 814-943-6112 or fill out the contact form at WRTA.com. The WRTA sportsmen.
In a divided world, at least we can all agree on one thing. We're number one for breaking news.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA.
You know, for the heck of it, I just signed on to Twitter to see what's going on since I had not been on today. And I found out there's a whole bunch of people that misconstrued something I said over the weekend. And it's like, boy, this is the most interaction I've had in a long time. And one of the people I follow says, I just want Elon Musk to ban people too stupid to recognize sarcasm. And I said, I'd lose half my retweets and 73 follower accounts who didn't get what I said if that happened. But, hey, you know, you'll have this. In case you didn't hear, it seems like Mr. Musk is going to get Twitter. So now we can move on to something else frivolous after this. Something not frivolous is the American job shortage number. And this is something that Dr. James B. Huntington comes up with every month. Where are we on the latest one, sir?
Well, the latest one decreased, which is good. And we are now at 16.6 million. That's a measure of latent demand. It shows that's how many new positions, those that are not advertised, could be quickly filled if everyone knew that it would, getting a job would just be like running an errand for another day. So that's the 400,000 decrease puts it actually about 600,000 only above what it was right before the pandemic. It was right around 16 million. So the lower the better. It's interesting to note, because this takes people with so many different employment statuses, when you talk about 11 or 12 million job ads, that doesn't seem so big if you consider that 16 million, over 16 million, could potentially take jobs.
Let's see, I'm looking at this here. With labor force participation rate and the employment population ratio improved slightly, they're now at 62.4 and 60.1%. Are they the biggest, aside from the AJSN for our purposes, are they the biggest things that you look at in this, or the most important numbers that you talk about in this?
Well, I have a string of other ones that I consider to be valuable, and that's the net new non-farm payroll positions, a.k.a. jobs. That was up 431,000, which is excellent because our population increase is getting so slow that we only need about 40 or 50,000 to cover that. We have those two. I look at unemployment, not only the normal seasonally adjusted one, but unadjusted, because that shows what it actually is, and that can tell us more also. We have the number of people who are officially unemployed, that's 6 million now, down 300,000. People who are on temporary layoff, about 800,000. 1.4 million who have been out for 27 weeks or longer. That's important because it tells you how many people are really not doing well with today's job market. And then the two you mentioned, which are the best indicators of seeing how many Americans are actually working or one step away. When you see the employment population ratio, that's just a simple thing with how many people, what percentage of the people in this country have jobs. And that's, they both went up these percentages. 0.1% is significant, meaningful, and 0.2% is better than that. It's a strong month, and both of them improved by these amounts here. And other things I track are the count of people working part-time for economic reasons, and that is those who count as employed because they're working part-time, but they're looking for full-time positions and not getting them. There are 4.2 million of those. That's still healthy. Around 3 million, if I remember right, was what it was 2.5 years ago. So there are a goodly number of people who don't count in any other number who want to work more than they're working. Then we look at wages, aka average hourly non-farm payroll earnings. Those have been fluctuating around somewhat. They're up 15 cents an hour, $31.73 is the mean, not the median. That's still less than inflation. Inflation is high enough, so we have to always take these things with that grain of salt. Sometimes it's not been good when average wages have gone up because lower end people have lost their jobs. And then we have the AJSN, and those are the numbers I consider to be important. This whole string, you really can't go on one. I think a lot of too many commentators or headline writers or somebody say, well, we gained several hundred thousand jobs, it was a good month, period, full stop, end of sentence, and that's not necessarily true at all.
I'm looking at a couple of the other statements here to recap some of this. Compared with the year before, AJSN dropped almost 3.9 million, 3.4 million of that from those jobless, half a million from the lower count of people interested in work but not searching in the last 12 months, and the other statuses collectively a little changed.
Yeah, so I mean, for the AJSN, I do take percentages of a whole bunch of different statuses. Regular listeners will know, but 90% of those unemployed, 90% of those discouraged, all the way down to 5% of those who say they do not want a job, because the numbers tell us that when jobs get more plentiful and easier to get, some people in this category of saying they do not want to work change their minds and get out there and fish around, and they wind up getting either employed or with a different status. That's even only 5%. That's still, you're talking about 93 million, over 93 million say they do not want a job. So even 5% of that is 4.7 million or was in the March data.
Finishing up, you say, how we do from here will depend on how many of the 600,000-plus new entrants find work. If they do, April should match or exceed March. If they don't, we may more or less break even next time. For now, though, and you always use the metaphorical turtle, once again, the turtle took a good step forward. So it's better than it could have been.
Yes, no, it wasn't quite as strong as I thought the month, but it still was definitely a thumbs-up positive proposition. We are improving, and if this unemployment rate keeps dropping, then we're going to be at the pre-pandemic level. We don't have the number of jobs. We've had a lot of positions go away from especially automation and efficiency, but we're looking very good. We're going to have an unemployment rate in a few months at the rate it's going that's about the same as it was before COVID-19 started.
Talking with Dr. James B. Huntington, author of Work's New Age, about jobs in the economy. We'll continue about some other trends on the way, and you can join us as well at 814-946-0435. By the way, one of the folks on Twitter that I follow, JT Lewis, says, if Elon Musk buys Twitter, I'm deleting the app. Is the new, if Trump wins, I'm moving to Canada.
In these uncertain times, family budgets are tight, but appliances still need replaced or repaired when they quit working.
There goes the dryer. Now what?
Now you go to Appliance Station. Appliance Station offers affordable reconditioned appliances. Appliance Station can also fix your broken appliances right in your home. Or if you prefer to do it yourself, they sell all of the replacement parts you need. Ask for Mindy. She's there to help. Appliance Station, a half block down from the Railroaders Memorial Museum at 1129 9th Avenue, Altoona. Like Appliance Station on Facebook.
Research shows people remember radio ads that remind them of the past. So to help you remember that Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need, here's an ad that'll really take you back.
Back in my day, I heard a voice from the radio say, Liberty Mutual customizes my home insurance so I only pay for what I need. I'm getting on in years now, but heavens to Betsy, there are some things an old fella like me just never forgets.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Here's NFL legend Terry Bradshaw.
This is it, your last chance to win big money from Publishers Clearinghouse.
There are just days left to enter to win. $7,000 a week for life on April 30th.
Yep, you got to enter PCH.com before it's too late. Real people really do win. And time's running out if you want to be next. It's your last chance to enter, people. Come on, let's go. Hurry, enter at PCH.com. $7,000 a week. For life. Last chance. Enter now at PCH.com.
Entries due 428. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited.
With Dr. James B. Huntington, author of Works New Age, talking jobs and the economy, there's a couple articles, and we'll link to these in the podcast as well, that are on the blog spot that we have from Dr. Huntington. Offices versus remote perceptions and changes keep coming in and will continue. Years ago, the Jetsons said, oh, we're just going to have, we'll have Zoom meetings. We just didn't know they were going to be called Zoom meetings, right? And I don't know if that's going to continue, because one of the things here says one size doesn't fit all. Employees' needs are changing workspaces. Explain some of that.
Yes, this is a piece from the New York Times. Actually, it was back in October, the oldest I have here. And it was a... designed for an office which included, and I'll use their words on this, that it was to be more flexible and workers would arrive in an anti-anxiety office entry with breathable and easily navigable spaces to choreograph the arrival experience to reduce crowding. Ugh. Wow.
Really?
After I get past the new age sort of spacey tone of all that, I'm left with what seems to have business fad written all over it.
Yeah. Just to give you a corollary to this, there's a school district in Pennsylvania called Jersey Shore School District, which is close to, it's between Lock Haven and Williamsport. And I remember there was a big fight. Well, there's always a big fight in that school district. People think Altoona is contentious, and it can be. But 30 years ago, they said, you know what, we're going to have these open concept schools because we think that's the best way to educate your kids. And of course, that meant they had to build new buildings. They had to spend millions of dollars, and everybody was upset and angry about that. And that, and bitter feelings have remained ever since. Last year, well, actually, no, this is pre-pandemic. The new superintendent came in. We have to get rid of open concept. This means we got to build walls and all those open space. It's like, oh, we're going through. And it only cost us millions of dollars to do it. But that's kind of what you're talking about here. It's whatever the latest fad is, that's what we're going to try. And let's waste money on that as opposed to, I don't know, make things?
Yes, well, it's people getting a bug in management about the advantages of something. And after a while, like in this case, what's going to happen at the places that have these entries and these things that take up what I was envisioning, a third of a typical office building floor being taken up by these breathable spaces and the choreographed arrival experience and all that, imagining that there would be some higher ups in a meeting looking at how much per square feet they're paying for X number of workers and saying we have to improve that. Well, I mean, let's have the latest thing, they won't say, but they will agree on, is more efficient use of office spaces, costing workers less. Maybe we can move over some of this saved money to salary and benefits and so on. And then you'll hear the word is about efficient office space. And you'll have a front door leading to a desk and a small area, and then the entire rest of the floor will be usual thing, cubicles, hallways, a break room, meeting rooms and so on without having this stuff, and they'll be happy about how much more efficient they're using this office space. This is the way the business fads go. They're often pendulums. They don't understand the past. They don't have a sense of history with things that have been tried before and failed before. I've noted how many times we've gone back and forth between working from home and working in the office, and each time it's like they're discovering the wheel, the big advantages of the one that isn't mostly in use, without knowing what has happened in previous incarnations of these things. So they can try, they can come up with this sort of thing, but it's hard to see that that's really necessary. You are, after all, I'll pretend to be one of these vice presidents in a meeting. You're dealing with adults here. They are going into the office. They know they are going into an office. It's up to them to govern themselves. And instead of us babying them with spaces that are designed to reduce crowding and cut anxiety, that's really up to them to deal with. Let's hold them able. There's a business expression for dealing with their office experience, and we won't be the ones spending money on this extra stuff.
Well, you know, the thing is making it a navigable and welcome space. Here's the thing. I used to work for a company where when you'd come in the door, people would just either look away from you or grunt and double down on whatever they're doing because a lot of them were miserable and nobody said hello. I come into work here, and the little bell rings on the door because it used to be a retail establishment many moons ago. Jody, who runs the office, says, good morning. I say, good morning. We say hello and, you know, and find out if anything happened overnight. If not, just, you know, go to work and we just have fun. It isn't a matter of the office. It's a matter of the office personality and what is expected and whether people are happy to be there or happy to see you and just let you do your job, or they want to make up junk like this.
Yes, and they can't dictate personalities. They wouldn't be successful if they tried to anyway, but you're right. I mean, having a few well-placed, honestly friendly people probably would do more to make the arrival in the office low on anxiety. Or so it seems to me.
Is it true that remote work is failing young employees? I mean, if they don't know how to interact with people by this age, and some don't, frankly, they're certainly not going to learn it if they're just spending all their time on Zoom.
Yes, some don't. Well, this is a problem. This is a real gap. The authors of this piece uncovered is that a lot of people are sort of getting dumped into home offices, and here's what you can get, and your hours are such and such, and here are some people, your contacts, and so on. They're not really being introduced that being acclimated to a job takes a lot of people, a lot of, like you say, these comments, and knowing who's around you and seeing people and getting a more substantial feeling of how things actually work there. And they're missing out on a lot of these things if they're all exclusively. It would seem to me like people who are working remotely should be brought in to the office for at least a couple of weeks at the beginning to do all this stuff. So they get a feeling that the office or the people they are dealing with, you know what they look like, you know what they're really like, and they can go home and sort of feel that they are part of the organization instead of just one little isolated spoke. So I think they discovered something here, and I think, yeah, I mean, again, cutting costs is a big thing, and it may be that if you have a whole office full of people who work from home, they're not trying very hard to bring people on board as much as they should. I'm talking mainly about informal ways instead of the formal things.
Well, if you have No, I was going to say, if you have worker stats and you can see whether they're productive or not, that's one thing. But if it, there, I'm sure there are certain numbers where, all right, you processed a certain number of cases today at home, but you don't know, since you were dealing with customers, why something took an hour for one and 15 minutes for another and 3 minutes for another. You're just like, well, I don't see that you're using your time constructively. Somebody could process 15 cases in one day and do them very well. Somebody else can process 40, and they have lost you tons of business because of the way they did it.
Right. Yeah, there's just a lot of nuances, a lot of depth, and a lot of detail, really, to cubicle work that are not going to be communicated well with new hires. And if these new people are really in their 20s, especially early 20s, they may not have long experiences working with people in business settings. They will not, and they will not know these things. There are so many people, there are still a lot of people who are not full adults, really, at those ages, and they will need more help. They may be the employees you want, but you can't assume that they will be self-sustaining and totally independent a year or two after they get out of college.
Speaking of which, I have to imagine, say there was somebody who their last 2 years of, well, maybe just toward the end of one semester, and then the next year, or their final year of college for their graduation year, they spend it doing remote classes, wearing masks if they are going out, and then they get hired, and the first thing they do is, okay, we're going to do remote work because we can't open our office yet. And so for somebody that went through this for the past 2 years, they graduated college that way, they started in business that way, if they're lucky enough to get the job they want that pays something, they haven't had really any personal interaction for those 2 years, and I have to wonder, doesn't that get a little rusty for some folks?
Yes, because of the pandemic, that's especially bad now, that particular problem you mentioned. But they're not going to get people on the cheap to be well acclimated to the dynamics of how things work, not only in offices, but with your coworkers remotely. That kind of thing really has to be learned.
We're talking with Dr. James B. Huntington. There's a couple of terms that he mentions in one of the articles I thought were interesting. We can start with those, and we'll just have a few minutes left when we get back. But if you have a quick question, 814-946-0435.
The opinions you hear on WRTA are the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or advertisers.
Dr. Mehmet Oz confessed, quote, "I'm not socially conservative." Mehmet Oz is a liberal on guns. Listen to him in his own words.
How do we keep guns out of the wrong person's hands? Red flag laws.
Even worse, Oz supported New Zealand-style forced government gun buybacks, tracking gun owners with universal licensing, and an assault rifle ban. No wonder Mehmet Oz confessed, quote, "I'm not socially conservative." Mehmet Oz, a Hollywood liberal and total fraud. Dave McCormick, he's an Iraq combat veteran with a Bronze Star. He's a proud son of Pennsylvania and a sportsman. Dave McCormick is a conservative who you can trust to stand up to the woke liberal mob and protect your Second Amendment rights. Honor Pennsylvania, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. Paid for by Honor Pennsylvania, Inc. HonorPennsylvania.com.
Get active for the summer with the Blair Regional YMCA. Early registration for the summer camp is going on now at BlairRegionalYMCA.org. Also, like them on Facebook, if you would. Would you like to learn more about the Hollidaysburg's Canal Basin, that area and more? Hollidaysburg Heritage Guided Tours begin this week. For details, hhgtours.org. They've got an If you haven't been on one of these things, you really got to try it. And here's some important dates to keep in mind. May 20th will be this year's first third in the Berg, with Hollidaysburg small businesses having extended hours and special discounts. And June 7th, fingers crossed that we don't get a blizzard the day before. Could happen, you don't know. June 7th, the first farmers market will take place in Hollidaysburg. This list of events brought to you by Keller Engineers, Borough Coffee, S&A Homes, Holiday Pools and Spas, Blair Mill Outlet, Epic Pyrotechnics, there's always something happening in Hollidaysburg.
I always wanted to learn Spanish, but I never thought I'd have the time. Then I discovered Babbel. Me llamo Sean.
Babbel's lessons are fun. They only take like 10 or 15 minutes, and in 3 weeks, presto, you're speaking another language. Like magic.
I love that Babbel's lessons aren't just robots talking. They're voiced by native speakers, so you get the pronunciation just right. And they're designed by real language teachers, so you learn how to have real-world conversations, things you'll actually use.
3 weeks. It's incredible. After 3 weeks, I'm on vacation in Paris, having a conversation in French.
There's all kinds of ways to learn. Use Babbel's podcasts or games or videos. You can even join live classes with a language teacher.
If you want to learn a language, there's no faster, easier, better way than
Babbel.
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 Babbel. Évidemment.
Go to Babbel.com to try for free. That's Babbel.com. Babbel.com.
Are you a nurse seeking a more rewarding career? The Pennsylvania Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is looking for compassionate RNs, LPNs, and CNAs to care for the brave military veterans and their spouses. At our Hollidaysburg Veterans Home, we offer competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities to grow. Learn how you can use your nursing skills to embark on a rewarding career at veteranshomes.pa.gov.
Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
Wake up informed.
Really blows me away.
Local and national news to start your day.
It's pretty obvious what the people want.
Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA.
WRTA 3, Doug Herendeen, Dr. James B. Huntington, and one of the articles we're talking about from his Works New Age blogspot, Offices versus Remote Perceptions and Changes Keep Coming In and Will Continue. And there's a whole new lingo, apparently, that is coming here, the new language of the office, Aldesco. Big deal. I've eaten lunch at my desk for years.
Yes, yeah, it's just a cute way of saying that's what you're doing. And yes, nothing new, nothing new. And then they have Zoombies, sort of self-explanatory. People who've been so on Zoom so much, they're out of it. They're sort of glazed over. And they have bookcase credibility.
This one I love.
Yeah, so the Zoom call, the background is getting to have real significance. People are putting effort into what people are going to see behind them. And one of them with the bookcase credibility is arranging for specific, good, positive business books, far-seeming business books behind you during a video call.
Well, you know, that's been done in the past. Before we were doing Zoom and everything else, occasionally, very occasionally, somebody would be from their home office over the internet or as this was starting in news. And I often thought, and I believe I heard there are people that actually will come in and work on that background for you so it suggests a certain thing. So it like, for instance, if you wrote a book, it's going to be behind you where it's plainly seen, where certain other people whose books you admire and are similar to what you're trying to do, they'll be visible as well. It ain't new, but now it's like we're all getting to take part, I guess.
Yes, much more common. It reminds me of the ads, the TV commercials for legal services where they show lawyers standing in front of their legal library.
Yeah, they could be Funkin' Wagnalls from 1975, but you wouldn't know. You can't see.
Right, right.
People even remember Funkin' Wagnalls Encyclopedia.
Oh, look that up in your Funkin'
Wagnalls. Yeah. That's the basic idea on that. Commuter's Delight. Treats brought into the office for those unlucky enough to be there. Are we still going to look at people who have to actually be in an office as unlucky? Are there some people that have that view?
Know. Some prefer it. I mean, a lot of people do prefer it. A lot of people like to have that barrier between their home life and their office life, and there could be real advantages to that. Some people would much rather have it. But
well, if you work from home, you never leave work.
That's true. I mean, there is a lot to be said for going into an office still. Then we have polywork, and that's people multitasking, not between tasks, but between jobs. people who are earning money in another way and spending time going back and forth between Zoom calls and things they have to do for their ostensible regular job and other efforts they have, then they have synchronous time realizing, just people getting to realize how important it is to be available at the same time as someone else, so you can actually have a phone call and go back and forth right then instead of over a longer time. So
as opposed to playing phone tag.
There will be more.
Yeah. Dr. James B. Huntington, it's Works New Age. You can find it on the internet, and you can also find it, because we're going to post links to these stories from it on the podcast later today on WRTA.com. Dr. Huntington, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, listeners.